We are Harvard Ventures, and this is The Bottom Line, a podcast about entrepreneurship, innovation, and everything in between. I'm Virginia, and today we have special guest, Professor Robert Langer, co-founder of Moderna, David H. Koch Institute professor at MIT, and the most cited engineer in world history. Now, Harvard Ventures had the chance to interview Professor Langer in May of 2020, where we asked him what his hot take was. His response was to continue wearing masks despite disputes between U.S. health officials. In May of 2021, when this interview was recorded 1 year later, we asked him the same question about his hot take. And so you'll have to listen to what his new opinion is at the end of the interview. And we had the chance to discuss how he evaluates startups out of his MIT lab, the race to develop the vaccine at Moderna, and what it really takes to have a high quality patent. So let's get right into the bottom line. Our first question, we would like to ask you, how did the idea behind Moderna originate and what was your role in its initial founding?
Well, so basically, I mean, I've been involved in doing things like nanotechnology and drug delivery, you know, starting in 1974. In fact, our lab was the first one to encapsulate and deliver nucleic acids from tiny particles, like microparticles and nanoparticles. But at any rate, we've gotten involved in starting a number of companies over the years. In 2010, a young scientist from Harvard, Derek Rossi, came to see me. He had done some, I think, very interesting work before him, Yamanaka in Japan, in fact, won a Nobel Prize for this, had taken, done sort of gene therapy with four factors, they called them Yamanaka factors, and basically converted regular type of cell into something that was like a stem cell. And Derek had the idea that maybe he might be able to do that rather than using DNA, with RNA. So he and his team worked on that and had some promising results. And he came over, Tim Springer had suggested that he see me. And so I I talked to him he also talked to Flagship Ventures and Nubar Fayan, who's a very visionary chemical engineer. Actually, I was on Nubar's thesis committee. And then also Ken Chen, who was a cardiologist who Derek knew. So anyhow, the four of us, Nubar, Derek, Ken, and myself, started Moderna, basically meeting probably something like once a week in Flagship's offices to try to figure out what we might do. And the particular interest that I think Nubar had, you know, I was interested in too, was therapeutics. I mean, there are a lot of things that one could do with this. So at any rate, that's how it got started.
Well, you've certainly changed my life and millions of others. I had the Moderna vaccine quite recently, so thank you so much. So you're the most cited engineer in history, and you have over 1,300 patents. Which invention are you most proud of producing?
Yeah, well, I would say there's a couple. Sometimes it's like asking who's your favorite child and so forth. So it's a little bit hard to say, but let me give you two. One was this early discovery that we made where, you know, before we were involved in this in, 1974, before we were involved in this, what happened is that people didn't even think you could deliver molecules over 300 molecular weight from tiny particles like nanoparticles or microparticles. And we published a paper in Nature showing that it was possible for the first time to do that. So that would be one of them. And then the other one I'd say is probably the idea that Jay Vacanti and I had. Jay is a surgeon at Mass General, which basically provides the basis for what's called now tissue engineering or regenerative medicine. And that was really the idea of combining cells and materials or parts of cells and, to create virtually any tissue or organ, including organs and tissues on a chip.
Wow.
Wow, very impressive to say the least. And so, you know, 2 years ago, Moderna's market cap was around $7 billion as a recently IPO'd biotech company. So it's amazing to see Moderna offering a similarly popular vaccine as Pfizer, which is a $200 billion pharma giant founded in 1849. How did Moderna scale up to provide a massive share of vaccines around the world and compete with a company that's more than 170 years old?
Well, first, Moderna has had a fantastic team. I mean, we've got a great CEO, Stéphane Bancel, you know, a terrific president, Stephen Ho, you know, great manufacturing person, Juan Andres, and great scientists like Melissa Moore and Kerry Bonato. So having great people is one of the key things. And by the way, just, and I'll come back to this, you know, Pfizer made a deal with another startup company, BioNTech. You know, and they, it wasn't like they were going to take the risk and do it themselves. I mean, in the beginning. So what happened, again, going back with Moderna, you know, there was a whole bunch of things that were done. You know, Noubar Afeyan, who I mentioned, who's chairman of the board, and Stéphane and myself and others. Basically, we made an investment of building a really big manufacturing plant, which is in Norwood, you know, that could manufacture the nanoparticles that are key to the vaccine and the messenger RNA, originally largely for cancer vaccines, which is still something we're working on. But we had that plant, you know, ready and working, you know, to do things for clinical trials. And like I said, then we had all the scientists that were working incredibly hard on this. And so basically it was really because of this terrific investment in both the science and the manufacturing that Moderna was able to do things. And now coming back to Pfizer, I mean, Pfizer's done terrific, but really their partner BioNTech, they in Germany, I mean, they basically started a couple of years even before Moderna did. And they, I think, also have done a terrific job, you know, and Pfizer made a partnership with them. And I think all of them have been terrific companies. You know, I'm very proud of what Moderna's done. But and ultimately, it's also about the data. I mean, Moderna, even though, by the way, and all these companies certainly got criticized because people, I remember when we did stuff even like less than a year ago, you'd see headlines come out that this isn't how you do science. I remember that because the Boston Globe had me on the front page, and Stat, of course, is a Southern journal, and they would keep criticizing Moderna. And basically, you know, to me, Moderna did a great job on, you know, the clinical team with Tal Sachs and others, and, you know, drove this into clinical trials and got 94, 95% efficacy and terrific safety. And then they manufactured it, you know, really excellent. So it's really just having great people, but it's also having had this investment, you know, that Noubar and Stéphane and others were smart enough to make.
Remarkable. And it's pretty ironic they're telling you this isn't how you do science when you're one of the top scientists in the world. And so we want to talk a little bit more about, you know, your career. So you know, who has been your greatest mentor throughout your career and what did they teach you?
Yeah, well, I was very, well, actually, the person who has been my greatest mentor was Judah Folkman. I mean, that's actually an easy answer for me. So when I was a graduate student, I applied to, you know, all chemical engineers generally went into doing work in oil companies. And I ended up being actually the only engineer at Boston Children's Hospital at Harvard Medical School. And Judah Folkman was a surgeon and who was a very visionary guy. And he hired me to see if we could figure out a way to stop blood vessels from growing to cancer cells. That's also where I got involved in creating these micro and nanoparticles, because we needed them to study to deliver these molecules. But he was just a fantastic person. First, he was a great human being. Secondly, he believed pretty much anything was possible. And he got criticized a lot by the scientific community, but he never gave up. And of course, today, angiogenesis inhibitors like Avastin and also drugs like Eylea and Lucentis, these are all blockbusters. They're some of the most successful drugs in history.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. Langer, for answering my questions. I'm now passing it off to Shayak.
Awesome. Thank you. So next, we'd want to learn more about how you've been involved with founding more than 30 startups in the last 30 years. How do you manage being a professor at MIT and all of the ventures that you have created or advised?
Yeah, well, it's actually not as hard as it might think. First, if you do one a year or maybe a little more than one a year, you know, the biggest involvement in terms of time is in the beginning. And also, I also sometimes use the analogy, it's kind of like children growing up, right? When all of you were babies, you probably need a lot of nurturing from your parents. When you're a couple of years old, you need less. You know, when you're older, you need less. And then, and maybe when you get to your age, you may or may not even want that nurturing or want the, you know, I have three kids, so I see different levels of interest in my involvement with them at different times of their own lives. And really all I care about is a happy kid or a happy company. So, but it's really the early stages that need the most time. And then the second thing is almost all the time I've done these companies, I've done them with my students or close colleagues, you know, who are friends of mine. And so, you know, that they're people I'm going to talk to anyhow, and I want to be involved with anyhow. So basically that's kind of a lot of what I do. And I guess I feel like so many times students have this dream of seeing the work they've done in the lab that they've spent 5 or 6 years on leading to a company. So, you know, if they want my help to do it, I'm really honored and delighted to be able to help that happen. But that's kind of what I've done.
Wow, that's really lovely to hear about. Next, so when students or colleagues come to you with startup ideas, how do you evaluate whether or not the venture has potential?
Well, I don't know that I'm necessarily the only expert, but the criteria I've generally used in the lab is it shouldn't just be an idea. It really, you know, I think that it needs to really have something with it. So basically what I've usually said is, one, it should be some type of platform technology, you know, something you can use over and over again. Moderna is a good example, right? You can take mRNA, you know, whether it's to treat cancer, COVID, heart disease, you know, and put it in different nanoparticles. And it's almost kind of a plug and play. I mean, that's oversimplification, but it's a core technology you can use over and over again. So you can do, which Moderna has done, deals with AstraZeneca on heart disease, deals with Vertex on lung disease, deals with Merck on infectious disease or cancer vaccines. So at any rate, you can parse pieces of it out to help make the company stronger, get additional expertise and actually get additional financing. So without still giving away a lot of it as well. So like COVID, we're doing ourselves. So platform technology is one. Secondly, it should, I would like to have substantial in vivo data, ideally, when we do it. Third, I'd like to have a really good publication, like in Science or Nature, when we do it. Fourth, I want to have really good intellectual property, ideally even blocking patents, but really powerful intellectual property. Fifth is, a lot of times I'd want to have somebody who really wants to do this, you know, if it comes from the lab, that they really want to be a part of the company and help drive it. Not necessarily be the CEO, though I've had that happen a few times, but you know, maybe have a real high scientific position to make this move. So those would be some of the criteria. And obviously it's got to be a big idea, hopefully something that can have a major impact on the world.
Wow, yeah, that's quite detailed and really fascinating to learn about. Next, what do you think the fall will look like at MIT and Harvard? Do you foresee a hybrid learning environment in your lab?
Yeah, well, it's a great question for which I don't have a clear answer yet. You know, and I have no better crystal ball than anybody else. You know, I think MIT's plan now is to hopefully have the fall be back to closer to normal. I think that's the right way to look at it, but I think we'll have to see. I think it's something, you know, I think you don't want to take chances with people's lives. But I do think that the more people that get vaccinated, the better. I'm still a big believer in masks, but I think we clearly need to get as many people vaccinated as possible. And I think some of it depends on that.
That makes a lot of sense. And next, I'll pass it off to Annie.
Amazing. Yeah, and thank you so much, Dr. Langer, for your incredible insights. And it's really awesome to see the accomplishments you've done in the past and the breakthroughs you've made in science. And so I wanted to turn over back to you a little bit more about your work in biotech and also in Moderna. So I'd love to learn, what do you predict really as the future of Moderna's mRNA platform?
I'm very optimistic about it. I think it'll change the world. To me, it's just an incredibly powerful platform for several reasons. And I think that's something we always thought of, even before, you know, even going back to 2010. You know, what we thought about is that that basically you can do a number of things, and all of you probably know this, but if you look at the central dogma of molecular biology, right, you go DNA makes RNA makes protein. And protein drugs are, you know, already now in the hundreds of billions of dollars. I think last year, something like 7 of the top 10 best-selling drugs were proteins. But it takes a long time to make proteins. It takes, you know, could take well over a year, has complex manufacturing and complex purification procedures. Here, what you can do is, and you certainly got to see this with the COVID vaccine, you can make it, I mean, in the case of clinical trials, Moderna started clinical trials 42 days after, you know, after the outbreak. So, or it was first known. And basically, because what you can do is you can take the RNA, you can make the RNA very quickly if you know what your target is, like in this case, the spike protein. You could figure that out in just 2 days, which Moderna and NIH did. And then you could figure out how to make it, put it in the nanoparticles and so forth, and even manufacture it. So, but the beauty is the body is going to be the place where the RNA is making the protein. You don't need the big manufacturing plants and all these purification procedures because you have the body to do everything for you. The other thing is you can develop all kinds of intracellular diseases with this. So it really opens the door to many things. And Moderna is already in 14 clinical trials for very different diseases, from cancer to heart disease to, you know, to various vaccines. So I think it's a revolutionary technology. And of course, what we got to see with the COVID vaccine is also it's an incredibly effective way, more so, I think, than what people is not only is it much faster, it's been much more effective. So I think it's, you know, to me, it has an incredibly bright future.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I'd love to really also change a little bit of topic, but more kind of talking about genetic modification. And so I'd like to hear what your opinion is on genetic modification of humans, really given as CRISPR and other gene editing tactics will improve in safety and decrease off-target effects as well.
Yeah, well, I think the question is what you're doing is if you're trying to, you know, treat disease, I'm very much in favor of all these things, whether it's CRISPR or messenger RNA or anything else. If you're trying to do something else, you know, then I think it may, you know, that's probably not so good. But there's so many genetic diseases or that have some genetic basis or where messenger RNA in particular could be useful. I think CRISPR can be very useful too. I think there's a lot of things that I think genetic medicine will certainly change the way we treat patients. I mean, it already has, obviously, with the COVID vaccine. And I think there are going to be many, many other examples. You could just look at public, you know, at Moderna's pipeline as an example of what's happening. But like I say, 14 things in clinical trials and then probably another 10 to 14 at earlier stages.
Very interesting. And also, like, what biotechnology are you most bullish on for development in the next few decades? Where do you really see the future of biotechnology in the next years or, yeah, the next tens of years?
Well, I think that what you'll see, and it's what you have seen, is that you're going to see, but there, I'll go over some things that may get more attention, but I think you'll see a whole bunch of things that will be important. And then there are going to be a lot of things that we don't even know yet that will be important because they haven't been discovered or invented yet. I mean, like just as an example of that, if I asked any of you what CRISPR was 10 years ago, you probably wouldn't know, not because you were young, but because, no, you know, the key discoveries that led to it being used weren't made then. But anyhow, some of the areas that I think will be important are first genetic medicine, which you just mentioned, and that could be mRNA, DNA, gene editing, and so forth. I think secondly, I think we'll see more and more advances in the immunology area. We've already seen big advances in terms of immunotherapy for cancer, but I think there'll be others in terms of autoimmune diseases and things like that. I think we're going to see more advances in artificial intelligence as a way of taking all kinds of data and helping predict what's going to happen for drug design. And I think it'll also help in analytics. I think we're going to see a lot, and we have seen other things in drug delivery, whether it's nanotechnology to deliver any of these things to the right site in the body, or new ways of taking complex molecules orally, or ways of crossing important barriers like the brain or others, to treat brain diseases. I think we'll see things like in digital medicine, where companies are trying to figure out how to treat or help treat, things like ADHD and different mental health diseases. I could go on and on, but there'll be an awful lot of things that that will happen, partly just because there'll be new biological advances, there'll be new material science advances. I should have mentioned cellular therapies, for CAR T cells, but also regenerative medicine, where you could take cells or molecules that cells have secreted, to help create new tissues and organs or to regenerate things like, say, for hearing loss, which is one we're doing with frequency therapeutics. And I think you could also envision organs and tissues on a chip that could based on these kinds of technologies that will greatly accelerate drug testing, I hope someday. So those would be a few. And like I said, there's a lot more.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Langer, for all of your incredible insights. I wanted to bring this back to our last question, and it's something that we like to ask a lot of our guests, and it relates back to our podcast that you were on last year in the beginning of COVID, really the outbreak back in April, regarding really what is your hot take. And last time on the podcast, you told me and Jess in our conversation about a widespread message of not wearing masks in the beginning of the pandemic and how that was something that you didn't believe in. And so it's really interesting to see how that position by a lot of members in like society and government has changed throughout COVID and how things have played out. And so I want to turn this over to you one more time and ask, what is your hot take now regarding COVID or biotech or your research, startups, really anything? We'll have to just hear your thoughts again.
I do remember that well. I mean, which was sad that people didn't listen. I guess they should have listened to your podcast, because even the World Health Organization was against wearing masks at that time. And I think the CDC might have been, but they all were very late to the game, unfortunately. And I think that's cost a lot of lives. I mean, not just then, but now, because it let COVID spread so much. Now what I'm going to say is more obvious, and I don't think anybody would disagree. I mean, it's sad to me that the World Health Organization disagreed with me then and the CDC. Now, I think, to me, it's making sure as many people get vaccinated as possible. I mean, and like I say, I think that may seem obvious, and I don't think any of those agencies that I just mentioned will disagree. There are a lot of people who will disagree, though. I mean, a lot of people are sadly against vaccination. And, what I try to say is the way that people might think is that if you got vaccinated, you're putting something bad in you. But my feeling is that you're going to get something, you have the potential to get something a lot worse if you don't get vaccinated. And I think it's sad that people, that unfortunately there's all these kind of rumors and blogs and things getting spread that vaccines are bad. I mean, I think vaccines, whether it's what's been done recently with mRNA or anything, really, vaccines have been historically one of the great ways of keeping people alive and healthy. So I just think that's the most important thing, to get as many people vaccinated as possible.
Thank you so much, Dr. Langer, for joining us today. That's a wrap and our end to your interview. So we really appreciate it. It was an honor to have you here again, and we can't thank you enough.
And that's The Bottom Line. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast, be sure to find us online at harvardventures.org. If you're a company or individual interested in working with us, email us at hello@harvardventures.org and follow us on Instagram at harvard_ventures. Tune in next week for another episode of The Bottom Line.